You're listening to All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Time again to review the week in state politics. Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation is here, as is Rob Schofield of the liberal NC Policy Watch. Good to see you both.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Redistricting, the word of the week. Listeners will probably remember 28 of the state's 170 legislative seats have been ruled illegal racial gerrymanders. New maps must be drawn. That's a process that is expected to impact a majority of the districts. On Wednesday, some lawmakers returned to Raleigh for a largely organizational meeting to begin the process of laying out when public hearings will take place. Lawmakers have a self-imposed map drawing deadline of November 15th. On Thursday, lawyers for the Southern Coalition for Social Justice asked a federal three-judge panel to prevent the legislature from conducting any business until new maps are drawn and a special election is held. They want maps in a matter of weeks. No decision yet on that request. Rob, what is the appropriate timeline here?
Well, what we've had is delay. The Republicans are trying to figure out a way to run out the clock. They're in, you know, the basketball analogy, the old four corners offense before the shot clock. They're trying to run out the clock. The plaintiffs have said, enough. This has been going on for years. We've elected people in unconstitutional districts. It's time to move on. It's time to have special elections. It's time to have constitutionally constituted legislative districts. Let's do it. Let's get on with it. It's as simple as that.
Becky, sophisticated computer software allows maps to be drawn in a matter of hours, past probably in days or weeks, as we saw last year. I'll touch on that in a moment. Do lawmakers need until November 15th?
Well, they have said that they want to have a very vigorous public hearing. Meetings and hearings and public hearings and public debate and public input into the maps that they will eventually, at some point, present to us. I don't know the time frame on that. The other thing, though, is they are waiting for direction from the courts. Part of the problem of this whole process is sort of the Goldilocks theory. You know, they don't know. They're trying to get it right. The courts say that's too much, that's too little, it's too big, it's too fat. You know, it's not quite right. Try it again, but not really giving the full directions on what the right answer is. So that's been part of the problem with this too, is the General Assembly is waiting for the direction from the court in order to draw the maps to whatever the specifications are and then to move forward.
What would be a fair time frame?
Jeff, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, how much public hearing do you need? There are going to be some people who, no matter what the public hearings are going to say it's not enough time. There's others that are going to say, you know, as Rob has said, let's just get on with it. Let's get the maps. Let's get a new election done. Again, it's that Goldilocks theory. What's too much? What's too little? What's just right? That's the question.
These guys weren't interested in process when they passed their previous maps. There was no public hearings. They just sprung the maps. They spring their election laws on people already fully cooked. Now, all of a sudden, when it's to their benefit to delay this process, we're going to take weeks and months to have hearings and public input. I really think, based upon what I've heard of what the judges said during the hearing on Thursday, they've about had it. At least two of the three judges have had it with them. I think we're very close to them issuing, if they're not getting specific directives or feel they haven't gotten them yet, I think they're going to get them pretty soon about, let's get this done.
Two of the three judges who are weighing in on this matter were appointed by Democratic presidents or nominated by Democratic presidents. We can note that. We talk a lot about redistricting, new political maps, and the effect that it could have on the state legislature. Presently, Republicans, of course, hold veto-proof majorities in both chambers. New boundaries historically will offer an opportunity to the party that's in the minority. However, lawmakers redrew congressional maps just last year. Those are federal maps. They were ordered to do so by courts, and they did so in short order, about 2 weeks. And the result was that there was really no change, literally no change, along party breakdown. There were the same number of Republican and Democrat U.S. House members from North Carolina before and after those new maps in 2016. So, wondering from each of you, how much of a difference do we really expect?
I'm not expecting a huge change, but I think it could make a difference. The margins are pretty small between, for instance, a veto-proof majority in the House and a non-veto-proof majority in the House. I don't think anybody expects the Democrats to take over the House or the Senate based upon some special election. There's also all kinds of complications in just recruiting candidates in the short time frames, and it's to the benefit of the Republicans to string this out and then to give this smaller window as possible to recruit candidates. Right now, candidates are actually afraid to come forward and say they're going to run because they're afraid then they'll get redistricted out of the district that they live in. So there's a lot of wild cards here. So I don't think anybody expects dramatic change.
I think we are going to see some changes. With those 28 districts, it's kind of like when you throw a pebble in a pond, the ripple effect with that. You know, you can't change the parameters of one district without affecting the district next to it and the district next to us. Now, most of these districts that are in question are in the eastern part of the state. I think everything is, as far west as we go, is Greensboro, Winston-Salem area. So theoretically, you could see a lot of changes in the eastern part of the state, maybe not as many in the western part of the state, but there could be tremendous differences there. We just don't know yet. We'll know more when we see the maps that are drawn, when we get the direction from the courts and the maps are presented.
Also this week, Democratic Governor Roy Cooper signed House Bill 589 into law. That's a solar piece of policy, and it at the same time loosens some solar restrictions. It puts an 18-month ban on any wind projects in the state. As he signed the legislation, he also issued an executive order that I view as trying to support wind energy moving forward, even if there is a year and a half limit on what can happen in the state. How did you think he handled this?
I think he had to. That's about what he had to do. He obviously is trying to find a solution that satisfies folks who care about the environment, who are very loyal supporters of his. And I think that that's his point of view as well, is that he wants to help the environment. He didn't want to veto this bill because there's a lot of good stuff in it. He's not happy with the wind moratorium, but he's willing to, you know, make it work by moving ahead with development of wind energy as best as he can with, you know, in the time between now and the end of the moratorium. So it's, you know, his best effort at crafting a compromise, really.
I think he did, Jeff, pretty much what he had to do. You know, North Carolina governors don't have line item vetoes, and I understand that he had the most heartburn over the wind moratorium piece of the legislation. This seems like a reasonable way to adjust it. The executive order, as I understand it, would clear the way for permitting, allow the wind companies to go ahead, not actually turn on the switch, if you will, to turn it on, but to proceed through this 18-month moratorium as if it will be lifted at the end of it.
All right, finally, after about a month-long break, the General Assembly convenes this coming Thursday. Its stated purpose to consider override votes of any gubernatorial vetoes, but of course, they could take up other matters as well. What are you watching for next week in our final moment?
Well, I've also heard rumors that they may not even take those override votes next week because they may not have enough people there to do it. It's a very fluid situation, and that's unfortunately sort of the reality of the modern General Assembly, is that you never know minute to minute, hour to hour, what they're going to do next. So we'll be watching very closely.
Well, of course, for the override votes, there is no time limit on that. They can take it up or not. They can wait and do it later. But also, there are 10 different things that they can do in that adjournment resolution. One is to consider bills that are in conference. And there's half a dozen bills that are sitting in conference that I'm looking at, paying attention to. One is an environmental bill that has some interesting things in it. So who knows what they're going to do? I mean, I'm getting indications that they may not do very much this mm-hmm. time. Don't forget, they're scheduled to come back again in September. So we may see even more action then.
The door is open, not closing anytime soon. Rob Schofield is Director of Research at NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Becky Gray is a lobbyist and Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks,
you
Jeff.
Too.